Good evening, Frog fans. We come to you. I actually don't remember which episode this is. I think it's either 213 or 214. I think it's 213 because with Jay Song was 212. But anyways, coming to you live. Again, this is Nathan Hernandez this time. Sean, unfortunately, had to go meet with the dean at the school because he's in trouble. But no. We have a great guest here tonight. Everybody's going to love him. But first, I'm going to give us a quick little update from TCU Horned Frogs on SI. Busy publishing, plenty throughout the week. Football, soccer, volleyball, equestrian are all ranked. Not football. Soccer, volleyball, equestrian are all ranked. So they have content on all those teams as well. If you go on the website. This week was actually Big 12 media for basketball in Kansas City, and they had people there to cover it. Women's basketball, Coach Mark Campbell, along with three of his players, were there Tuesday. Men's basketball with Jamie Dixon, along with three of his players, were there on Wednesday. And they have 20 different videos from interviews with the coaches that they'll be publishing on Friday. So go check those out if you have the time and just want to not work on a Friday. But anyways, coming to you live from the Hyatt at TCU, we have a special guest with us. He, let me get this, make sure I get this one right.
You played for me.
Played former TCU linebacker. I knew that part. First start in 2005 in the win against Oklahoma. And AP was playing at that time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Shut him down. First team all Mountain West Conference, drafted fifth round in 2009 by the Ravens. Jason Phillips, you know, one of those linebackers that epitomized Coach P's hard-nosed defense. We, as players, always kind of joked that he was the Brian Cushing of TCU. Just always had a bloody nose, something.
Just without the six-pack.
Yeah, just no six-pack. It's okay. But always just, you know, throwing his head in everything and making plays. But, yeah, Jason, why don't you tell us about your time here at TCU, how you got here, and how what all went into that.
Yeah, you know, going into the recruiting process, I played quarterback in high school. I was a quarterback for my dad. We ran the option, and I could throw a little bit. I just didn't know where the ball was going to go, so I knew I wasn't going to play quarterback. Going through the recruiting process, you know, at every camp, I played whatever position the coaches asked me to, but TCU was the one school that I felt like truly evaluated me and put me in the right position. They put me at running back, fullback, but I knew I was going to be a fullback. And that wasn't something I had ever, no other school had ever even looked at me at. And me and my dad talked about it and just realized that either they liked me enough or they evaluated me better than everybody else, and that fullback was going to be my position. Now, it ultimately didn't be, but that first year I got to play fullback. I got to get after Coach P's defense on scout team. I got scout team MVP, and that's what led to, you know, catching Coach P's eye and moving me to linebacker that spring. And then I learned the defense over that summer and then started that first game against OU and never looked back.
Did you get any touches at fullback? Was this in a time period where they gave the fullbacks the ball?
Okay, so yes. And I was I bet 80% for a touchdown within the 5-yard line. All through spring, all through camp, and then game day comes around and Coach P's like, give it to Will Jackson. And Will Jack was good. But I thought I was going to get a touch the ball and get to score a touchdown, and never did, but I'm okay with that. I knew what my role was, and it was linebacker, and I was good with that.
Going into that, you know, Coach P, we all know it as that's just something he does. He brings people in, whether it's a safety, quarterback, D lineman, something, and just moves them to linebacker. Do you think that that's where a lot of his success came from, was being able to make those transitions where people might not have seen them?
Oh yeah, 100%, especially early in his career. You know, I mean, there were guys like Tommy Blake, Stephen Hodge, Brian Bonner. I mean, I could go on and on.
Traven Howard was a safety.
T. Howard, yeah.
Wallow, too.
Yeah, I mean, all of them. And the thing GP did a good job of, it, and it's something I hope anybody listening, if you're a young athlete, understands, is he recruited athletes. He didn't recruit guys that specialized, because some coach that couldn't make it in high school that their parents paid a lot of money to said specialize. He took the guys that played basketball, baseball. I mean, I was a 110-meter hurdler. And then said, all right, I'll bring them in, and I'll make them what I can develop them into. And, you know, like I said, I started as a fullback, ended up moving to linebacker. I wasn't happy about it at first. I talked to my dad. My dad kind of put me in my place and told me Gary had forgotten more football than I knew. And learned the defense over that summer. And like I said, never looked back. But I think it's something we're losing in today's high school kids. You know, a lot of kids are specializing. A lot of kids are trying to focus on one thing. And
or even just one sport.
Exactly. And they all tie in together. You know, back when I was at TCU, we vertical hook VH. Well, you can't cross over when you're VHing. Well, when you're covering somebody in basketball, you can't cross over. It's the same thing. You know, it relates. And they all carry over. And it's something I think we're losing in the youth today, and I hope we get back, because it's, like I said, being a 110-meter hurdler, other than playing in front of 100,000 people, you know, football, that was the most fun I ever had competing, was running the hurdles.
Yeah.
And so it shows what kind of competitor you are. It also shows that if they bring you in at a certain position and maybe you don't work out, they can move you to another position because you're athletic enough to do it. You know what I mean?
Trayvon.
But if you've only played – exactly.
Came in quarterback, obviously. Ty Summers. Had that first year.
Both of them broke my tackle record.
Yeah. We went to Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, Deuce's first year at quarterback. Mm-hmm. Casey comes back in and then ends up actually getting hurt. But for a while, they had moved Trayvon to running back and receiver. And then we went 4-8, unfortunately. But then the next year, Deuce comes back in and just runs with it. And just the rest is history from there.
And it goes – real athletes, real dogs, real players can play anything. I mean, I remember going through the recruiting process. I was a tight end. I was a fullback. I was a safety. I was a linebacker. I was a DN. I just played whatever they asked me to play.
Yeah.
The real players, the real guys – they can do whatever the coach asks, and they don't mind doing it. They take it as a challenge, and I always took it as a challenge. And the one time I didn't was when I got named the starting fullback, and then a couple days later, Coach P moved me to linebacker. And I remember calling my dad and just saying, hey, call your buddies at Texas State. You know, I'm good at this position. And he just told me to shut the heck up. And he said, Coach Patterson's forgot, you know, knows more football than you. And then he said, how many snaps do you think you're going to play at fullback? And I hadn't really thought about it. I was like, I don't know, 20? He said, maybe 15, 10. He goes, how many snaps do you think you're going to play at linebacker? 70 to 80. And I hadn't even thought of that yet. And that was when I said, okay, I don't know as much as I thought. Yes, sir, coach, is how I answered everything from then on out.
Yeah. Glad you listened to him, huh?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it led to me, you know, going to the NFL, TCU Hall of Fame, all that good stuff. But if I hadn't made that switch and hadn't had a dad to put me in my place, I probably would have went to Texas State, been a mediocre fullback, and, you know, I'd be – who knows where?
Coaching Pop Warner.
Hey, man.
I'm just kidding. I coach 7-on-7.
I'd be coaching the heck out of that Pop Warner.
That'd be a good team. But, yeah, so obviously enjoyed your time here at TCU. Been around still. What people might not know is, well, in my playing time from 2013 to 17, you were actually GA. Tell us about that, you know, difference going from player to a coach and having to kind of approach it in a different way.
Yeah, no, I thought I knew a lot about the game as a player. I thought I was a smart, cerebral player, and I was. But coming in and looking at it from the coach perspective and seeing the why behind everything we did, and I always say there's a big difference in getting handed that packet and then writing that packet out and handing it to somebody. You just learn so much more, and it's something I wish – I don't have a lot of regrets in my career, not a whole lot at all, but I wish I would have taken that approach from my freshman year. I wish I would have attacked the game as a coach and known what everybody around me was doing. I knew what they were doing, but I didn't understand the why behind it.
Yeah. Even more so than in the NFL?
Yeah. In the NFL, it would have been – because, I was a guy that was a special teams guy, and I was a universal backup. I could back up Mike, Sam, and Will. And so knowing the entire scheme would have just helped me out even more there. The injuries didn't help, but I'm not going to make no excuses. That happens to everybody. But just understanding the why of what you're doing and why the guy next to me is doing what he's doing, the guy in front of me is doing what he's doing – it was a game changer for me, and it really opened up the game for me, and it made the game more enjoyable because I really understood it.
I don't know if you knew this, but you know our kicker, Griffin Kell?
Yeah.
So he was on our podcast a couple weeks ago, and you know what number he wore, right?
Yeah, and I actually saw that article.
Yeah.
I, think I sent it to him the other day. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, so he actually got his number that he wanted to wear in college from I keep wanting to say this. I keep wanting to call him Coach Phillips because he was my coach when I was there. but yeah, from Coach Phillips, he got that number from you. How did that make you feel when you kind of found that out?
Honestly, after reading the story about his grandpa wearing it and all that, it made me feel really good, especially because he's a great kid, great player, loves the program, was bought in, you know, the type of guy you want to be on your team. I have a thing I do now when I go speak to schools. I talk about being made athletes, and the made is M-A-D-E, my attitude determines everything. And so every time he kicked a field goal, I made it, I would put made with both our pictures next to each other. Kind of playing on both of it, you know. Yeah. But, I think the world of the kid, and after reading that story, it hit a little closer to home because I didn't know that the backstory to it.
Yeah.
And learning that made it a lot more special.
And that's what's, and we've talked about this with all of our guests, but that's just what makes TCU special. It's just we all have this kind of connection with former players, new players, they're all bonded in one way or another. Like I've mentioned that I've, obviously you were my coach when I was there, so you were on previous teams, but like David Hawthorne, Wayne Daniels, all of them, like, have weirdly, every time we all end up in the same place, we're all talking, and we're always talking about, you know, former teams, and obviously we get into the debates of who's the better team, and I won't put you on the spot like that, but we always get into those, and it's just cool to see like all these players from different generations all have something to bond over.
Oh yeah, you know, Coach P always said it's 40, not four. And that shows when you see guys, you know, the older guys talk to the younger guys, because you've all gone through the fire together. You know what I mean? The same fire you all went through together. And you build character through that. You build resolve. You build, you know, you learn how to fight adversity. And that helps you bond with guys. You know what I mean? When you know they've gone through what you've gone through, it's a lot easier to understand them a little more because you know how tough they are. You know what they can handle. And if you can handle working at TCU,
Coach P practice.
Exactly. If you can handle that, you can handle anything.
Because I was on a scout team, so I
remember
saw
you were a good receiver.
Coach P get on to all of us at one time. Like, it just was – nobody was safe at any point in time, especially on the defensive side of the field with, you know, GAs, coaches, position coaches, players, second string, third string, scout team. If you just didn't ever want to, like, see him walking your way, like, upset.
And he has that walk you can notice, especially after the knee surgery. But the thing I've always said about Coach Pree is I was the best I've ever been under him as a player, coach, worker, whatever it was. And it's because he holds you accountable, but he does it by showing you that he's accountable. You know what I mean? He puts in the work himself. And so when he gets after you, you can't really say anything back because he's usually right, and he's usually done the work himself. Yeah. And so that was one thing I always respected about him was how he was able to get after you, and then you almost felt bad for making him get after you because you knew he was right and you knew you were wrong, you know?
We all knew he was the smartest person on the field. Like, we were, even just in games, we'd be sitting there, you know, our offense is going, and we'd kind of be standing there, and he'd be next to us. And he would be calling out their defense, like, as it's about to happen. Like, this guy's blitzing, that guy's going to drop out. And we'd all just, like, sit there and wait. And then that would happen, and you just look at him. He'd just, like, give his little, like, and then, like, walk off.
He did a little smirk, and he's like, I knew it. Yeah. But that was one thing I knew about him as a player. But when I came back as a coach, I really grew to respect because that wasn't an accident. That was late nights. That was early mornings. That was him putting in the work, studying the film. And I thought I studied a lot of film. And turns out I don't study much compared to him. But the reason he was able to do that was because the work he put in, which, again, when you have somebody holding you accountable to the work you put in and he's putting in more than you, you can't really say anything back except, yes, sir, coach, and put more work in.
This week, obviously, you know, we take on Texas Tech before tomorrow. It's Thursday. Wow. Friday and early Saturday doing some Peach Bowl stuff because obviously that was 10 years ago now. Were you GNA at that time? You were 20.
Nope, that was the year. That was my last year with Philly when I blew my knee out for the third time.
Not to bring up bad memories.
Hey, man, I'm happy to get the years I got.
That's fair. But, you know, we honor that team. I have my biases. You know, a lot of people argue that could be the best TCU team. Obviously, there's
I would say it is, and I would say they got did dirty, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Like, they beat the you know, Ole Miss team 43-47-3.
42-3.
There's no reason they shouldn't have been.
And that Ole Miss team beat Alabama.
Yeah.
People forget
and
that.
And I'm not afraid to say it. I'll say it. They screwed them. I mean, it is what it is.
Unfortunately, we lost to that school down south in Waco. And it was a close game, too. That's the part that people don't get is, like, you know, we went on the road. We were actually winning by 3 touchdowns, and this is the part that hurts is that we gave up that lead. Holding PI calls aside, end up losing a very close game on the road. Baylor ends up losing on the road badly to West Virginia. And so every time they try to bring TCU up involved in that, I was like, oh, well, we won 60. I was like, you should have beat West Virginia.
To me, there's nothing that should have kept TCU out of it.
No. If they want to claim, oh, we have the Big 12 title. It's like, well, if you wanted the outright Big 12 title, you should have beat West Virginia.
Exactly.
And so that was unfortunately the way the Big 12 was set up at the time, was that round robin stuff that I hated it, but
and let's just be honest, the college football narrative, they wanted Ohio State or they wanted whoever it was. They didn't want TCU
bigger teams. Yeah,
they didn't want TCU coming in there and whipping somebody's butt like we did Ole Miss.
And
it
Michigan
ruins their little club.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day we should have been in it. And that team was probably the best that Coach Patterson's had as far as all-around team.
Yeah, it was the fastest team that I had seen. Obviously, Trayvon was doing what Trayvon did. We had J-Doc, you know, at wide receiver.
Every position.
An outstanding linebacker core.
Oh, Paul
Dawson. Yeah. Oh, what an animal.
I remember when I came back to coach, just kind of going back, watching film to kind of catch up on what we changed. Watching Paul, I was like, he's better than me. I know that.
And he got kicked out of practice almost every day.
And you know what? The good ones usually do.
Yeah. And then he shows up on game not doing assignments and then, you know, whatever. But he showed up game day, you know, made big play after big play, had that pick six against Oklahoma to kind of seal that game.
He had a good instinct for not hesitating. If he saw something happening, he was going to break on.
One of the most instinctual players I've ever seen play.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
But, you know, obviously if y'all are in town this week, go check out a lot of that stuff to honor the Peach Bowl team. They're also honoring 1984 team and the 94 team as well. Can't remember their bowl games.
Blue Bonnet Bowl.
Independence. And then 84 was Blue Bonnet. 94 and 84, I believe. Oh, I don't know what 84 is. I think those are the two. Because I know it skipped 04.
I know Coach Tim Teagle's up here. So,
go do that. Unfortunately, now we have to talk about our current big TCU team, who's, you know, not doing so hot. 8th in the Big 12. Luckily, just came off a win against Utah, which is good.
It's hard to do, especially at Utah.
Yeah, Utah, one, is a beautiful place to go. If you haven't ever been, definitely go check it out. But it is a hard place to play. Utah is a tough team for as much kind of crap as they're getting this year. That's kind of what they get for saying they're going to come in and run the Big 12 and then kind of just get punched in the mouth.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it. That being said, the toughest loss I had in my entire career was that 2008 Utah game. When we lost 13-10, I think it was, and then they went on to play Alabama in the Peach Orange Bowl, I think, and I had to put it on mute because the commentators kept talking about how great the Utah defense was. Our defense that year gave up 47 yards a game over the whole season.
Yeah.
The next closest was Texas, I think, with 89, and so I had to put it on mute because all they talked about was how good their run defense was, and I was just like, we should be playing here, but we lost, so we didn't get it. But it led to some good wins in the next couple of years for TCU.
Yeah. That's what people don't newer fans of TCU probably don't realize is Utah is a rivalry game.
Oh, yeah.
Because we obviously played in the same conference for a little while. So it's always kind of a heated one. Fans go at it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Utah fans kind of get into it with everybody, but at least lately.
Yeah.
But, no, it was good to see him come with the win. Defense, you know, finally actually played a good game.
Yeah, they look great.
How do you feel about how they did as a unit?
It's hard to play defense in the college football game today. So anytime you see a defense show up like that, it's always a plus. Mm-hmm. It's always it, shows they're getting better. They're learning how to work together. They're learning how to play together, and they just got to learn how to stack those games together. But again, offensive have gotten good in college football. It's hard to stop the ball in college football. Now, when you have a defense that does, especially the way they did the other night, that's something to build on. That's the glass half full, in my opinion.
Who do you think we can attribute that defensive success to the most? I know, obviously, it's a defense. It's a unit. A lot of things go into that. But who would you highlight from that unit?
I don't know if I could point out one. Obviously, the D coordinator did his job and set those guys up to make plays. And then the guys made the plays. Yeah.
Do you like that move to bring him back on the field, down to the field, out of the box?
100%. Yeah. Because it's a different atmosphere. I loved being on the field because I could look my guys in the eye and find out, what they saw, what they didn't see, if they were panicking, if they were calm. And I think that probably helped a lot. But it also brings you closer to your players. Yeah. When they make a good play, you're there to slap them on the back. When they don't do good, you're there to tell them, hey, you mess this up, it's over, move on. And I think that change might have helped. But overall, I think, to me, they look like they played pissed off. And that's how we used to play. And that's what I liked the most about it, was seeing 11 guys flying to the ball, being as violent as possible, because that's what we built this program on. And that is probably the best thing I took from it.
And like you said, like it's been the definition of TCU football is just kind of flying around physical. I'm going to hit you in the mouth. We're going to, obviously try to win by one, Coach P's philosophy on that one. But it's been missing a lot lately. We saw it in the 2022 year, when we came in and we went and beat Michigan. Defense was flying all over the place. We had two pick sixes, a goal line stand when they, I think it was, someone blew up somebody on a screen really quick, on a quick screen on the goal line after they ruled out.
Yeah, I could tell you who.
Yeah, I want to say.
TCU's got me.
But that's been TCU football. Obviously, that was missing a lot last year, but we've seen glimpses this year of it. How do you think we get that back?
You build on what they did last week. It's hard to be a phenomenal defense. It's hard to have 11 men to the ball every time. One thing I learned when I was playing with the Ravens was they always counted how many guys were in the picture in the tight view at the end of the play. If it was nine or more, we were good. And that's something I think those guys can build on, because, again, playing defense in college football today is hard. And what they did last week was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so I think they just need to take that and work forward. And let whatever happened in the past happen and move forward. Because, again, can't do anything about it. Sun's going to come up tomorrow. So you might as well just build on what you have now and forget about what happened in the past. Learn from it. Don't repeat it. But take the momentum they have now and finish out the rest of the season with it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then offensively we sputtered. We kind of did what me and my roommate, Patrick Zeller, played here. You obviously coached him as well. But we always kind of joke about how we just make things hard for no reason. And it kind of seemed like that's what we did this weekend. It was just the offense just made things hard. Couldn't get, one field goal or one touchdown just to extend the lead to more than 6 points at any point in time. And so we did have to rely on the defense. But we do have, a quarterback who's top five in passing yards this year. We have one of the better receiving corps in the country. We have Jack Besh, Savion, JP, just weapons all around. But I think our biggest struggle, and I think it's been like this all season, is our offensive line.
Yeah. One thing I've learned, my dad used to always tell me, dwell on the good. Dwell on the good. Don't worry about the bad. Dwell on the good. And I think that's what these guys need to do, is just dwell on the good. Find out what we're doing good and perfect it. And then what we're not doing great, work on it.
Yeah.
But again, the glass got to be half full. And I think that's the way they're starting to see it.
Yeah.
And once you get that mindset of, okay, yeah, we got a shot, because I had a high school buddy talk about this the other day. There's teams that hope they win. There's teams that believe they can win. And there's teams they expect they can win. We've always been a team that expects we can win.
Yeah.
And we need to get back to that mindset.
That's what hurts former players.
Yeah. And again, football is a hard sport to consistently win at. You know what I mean? I mean, look at Alabama. You know what I mean? They were on top forever and have fallen on. It's not an easy sport to consistently be great at. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of teamwork, a lot of camaraderie. And if you lose a little bit of that, it takes a little time to get it back. But from what I've seen over these last couple of weeks, they're getting that back, and they just need to keep building on that. And again, dwell on the good and just get back to we expect to win. You know what I mean? We expect to dominate.
And we've seen from years past and this year, just anybody in the Big 12 can beat anybody. You got a Baylor team who's not doing well, and they just went into I think it was in Lubbock, but they beat Texas Tech badly, like 60-something points to 40-something, I think, like almost like how we did with SMU. But it's just one of those leagues that anything can happen. It hurts the Big 12 in the long run just because they think that we're all bad because we beat up on each other, but it's good when the SEC does it. But we go into a Texas Tech team that, again, like I said, came off an embarrassing loss in their eyes against Baylor. We are on the 10-year anniversary of beating them 82-27. So
that, ran out of cannon fodder.
That will probably, hopefully that gets brought up at the game just to kind of like, hey, you know, we're still the bigger brother here. Where do you go into this game, into this Tech game?
You know, I think with the way college football is now and the landscape and the transfer portal, I don't think you can look at it as we're going to dominate, you know, because there's – so if you look at Alabama, if they had a tackle that would normally sit behind a guy for 2 years, well, now he's looking at a friend of his that's at Arizona State making $150,000. He's going to go play there. So you don't have the depth. You don't – it's evening out the playing field a little bit. And when that happens, there's going to be games where guys show up and shock the world like Vanderbilt did with Alabama. And then there's going to be teams that win when they should win. I think the only thing you can do is come in Monday, get ready to work, put your work in, put your head down, don't worry about the outside noise, and then let the game, you know, take care of itself. But if you put in the work and you play as hard as you possibly can, from what I've learned, things usually work out the way they should. And that's the one thing I think – I don't think we've gotten away from, but I would like to see us get back to is, you know, to hell with the noise, to hell with everybody else. It's us versus the world, and we're going to go get it.
I like it. And we can give, you know, score predictions at the end of the podcast usually. Couple more questions. If we have any questions from the audience, we can take them. I had a question. You know, we go into the Heisman race this year. You're a defensive player. You see Travis Hunter getting a lot of attention, offensive and defensively. If he was just playing defense, I don't think he'd get as much of it. But what is it? How does it feel seeing a defensive player kind of getting some recognition again in the Heisman
race? One thing about that kid that I love is you could tell he just loves to play ball.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He's just out there having fun. And that's something I feel like we're losing a little bit, you know? And so to see a guy like that come out and just play ball, it gives me hope for the future of college football. The other guy is the Boise State running back.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Well, just the fact that he said, I'm not transferring. It's about leaving a legacy here.
Yeah.
That's the mindset kids need to start taking on. You can make money. That's great. Yeah. But I've made money, and it doesn't change nothing.
Yeah, there's always kind of that fear, any fan base, of like, oh, this kid actually might leave if he does too well. He might go to an Oregon or somewhere where he's going to get a lot of playing time. Might maybe Alabama or one of those bigger schools. But there's always kind of that. And I've always said this year, like, hopefully we can keep our players, like the ones that are doing really well, just keep them here and provide for them to where they don't want to go play somewhere else. But that mentality of like, hey, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to make my mark, leave my legacy, it doesn't really exist as much. You don't see it. It's not as common.
No, and it breaks my heart a little bit because it that mentality is what turns you into good men, good people when you get done with football. You don't tuck tail and run from adversity. You stay, you fight, you build camaraderie with your buddies, and it's something I hope comes back to college football because, yeah, the money's great, but at the end of the day, I've seen more guys transfer, and then transfer right out of college football than I've seen transfer and become Joe Burrow. And I wish they would cover those guys more so guys would know, hey, man, stay, compete, you know, build your reputation, learn the scheme. Show you're committed. Show you're willing to fight through adversity. And if you make some money, great. But, again, at the end of the day, money's not the end-all, be-all. It comes down to your reputation, your name, and then who you are as a player. That's how you're going to be remembered, not how much money you made.
And that's what built TCU.
Exactly what built TCU. Yeah,
player-wise and coach-wise, because obviously we all know Coach B's one of the best coaches in college football. There's no doubt he had numerous offers to go coach somewhere else, but chose to stay here, and that leads into players wanting to stay and play for him. Like, hey, this guy recruited me, and you see it all the time when coaches leave, the guys they recruited leave too. If he stays, a lot of your offensive defensive coaches stay, and then they want to stay around after they graduate and they become coaches, and it leads just into this culture of, this is TCU, we're a family, we're going to stay here, we're going to bleed together, and it leads into what we talked about earlier.
It goes back to 40, not four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, making money, I'm glad these guys are making money, that's great. But at the end of the day, you know, college is about learning how to struggle, learning how to solve problems without a lot of resources. You know what I mean? Learning how to lean on your buddy. And that's what I feel like we're losing. And I hope we get that back. But I wouldn't trade my time at TCU for what they have now, because I know the struggle is what built me into what helped me, you know, fight my way onto a 53-man roster with three blown-out knees and a torn calf. Yeah. You know what I mean? If I hadn't had that, I don't think I would have made it for 5 years in the NFL. Yeah. And when guys just see a little adversity and say, I'm going to transfer here, I'm going to transfer there, to me, it shows a lack of loyalty and a lack of competitiveness. And if I'm an NFL guy, I don't want you on my team. You
know? Yeah, and what a lot of younger players, high school, going into college or even young college don't understand is no matter where you go, you have to compete.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're just that guy and you're Derrick Henry and you're bigger than everybody and that coach wants you and it's like you're going to play, most players have to compete for their position.
And that's the other thing. You know, with huddle, with all these resources these coaches have, if you're good enough, they're going to find you. I played with Jordan Sin was a guy I played with in Carolina from Portland State.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Kenny Onatula was, I can't remember, somewhere in Nebraska or something. I played with all these guys from these small schools that
get drafted.
They know how to find them. And those guys know how to humble themselves enough to say, okay, I'm not the big bad dog anymore. I'm a role player. I'm a scout team guy. I'm a special teams guy. And I, again, that's what helped me make my career 5 years was, you know, I was in the room with guys I shouldn't have been in the room with. And I beat them out because the coaches could trust me to back up all three positions, to be a phenomenal scout team player and be a phenomenal special teams player. And those other guys laughed at it. And then I watched them laugh their way to the airport while I was walking in to get ready for game one.
That was always my thing is because obviously I'm 5'8". Buck 60 soaking wet, 165 now, but put on a little muscle after college, unfortunately. But I was never the biggest. I was never the fastest. I wasn't going to, you know, outlift anybody in the weight room. Well, not anybody, but a lot of people. But nobody was going to outwork me. I was always going to work as hard as I could, as fast as much as I could. And then that was how you would beat me. Your drive would just have to just go forever because I'm not stopping. Like and Zeller always jokes about it. He calls me the Energizer Bunny just because I just always have energy. I'm just going to keep going. Like I'm going to keep coming after you, especially once I get ticked off.
Yeah.
Then it's a different story.
It's a chip on the
shoulder. Once my adrenaline starts going, it's over. But
and that's one thing when, you know, I get a chance working for BS in sports, I get a chance to go talk to, you know, athletes around the state. And that's one thing I talk to them about. I had a little talent. I could run straight line pretty fast. I had a little instincts, but I wasn't a 6'3", 250-pound linebacker. You know what I mean? I talked to those guys about the zero-talent characteristics, which are exactly what they sound like, you know, things that take zero talent to be great at. Mm-hmm. I was able to build a talentless talent off of those. And I don't think a lot of guys pay attention to those enough. I mean, just simple things like 100 miles an hour every play, showing up early, staying late, getting an extra workout in. That's what I built my career on.
Taking scout seriously.
Getting in the NFL, playing scout and special team is what helped me get vested.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I got 401k, pension, all that.
Yeah.
It takes most people 30 years of working with one company. I got in 5 years because I was willing to do the things that other guys thought they were too good to do.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to humility and don't get complacent. But if you come in with the mindset of, I will not be outworked by anyone, anywhere, any day, chances are you're going to be successful in whatever you do.
Anything in life.
Yeah, and then
any
that's the great
job
thing
you
about
do.
The zero talent characteristics. There's three. One, anybody can do them. They're highly contagious. And then when you get done with football, if you work them so well, they become almost like breathing to you. You carry them over into being a dad, you know, being a boss, being an employee, being a person in the community, whatever it is. And they help you find success in whatever you do after football, which is something not a lot of kids are getting today. You know, they're they're just not getting it. You get it in football, you get it in sports, but a lot of other kids are missing out on it.
Yeah, Coach P would always do that in the speech, like in a practice or a Colorado circuit. Like, he would highlight like a walk-on or someone like not big name that was like, you know, busting their butt. And like, this guy is probably going to be one of y'all's bosses in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Because the way that he works is going to translate into his career later in life. And a lot of the lazy people, you know, that's going to also transfer into later in life. And so you're going to end up working for this dude, and he's going to be the one paying your salary.
And that's what I tell when I go talk to high school kids. I tell them all the time, man, the CEOs out there are waiting on you guys because they know you know how to stick to a schedule. They know you know how to sacrifice a weekend because you got to get ready for Monday. They know you may have to say, nope, we can't go on vacation this week or this year. I got to get to work. And again, not everybody's learning that.
Nope. No, sorry. I was just checking to see if we had any audience questions. No. No more drinks. But yeah, I mean, we could obviously talk about this all day. This is what we, you know, breathe for 15, almost 20 years, yeah. Maybe even more of our life. And obviously it's just the way our brains still work, and we're still driven people.
It's a good way for your brain to be wired, you know.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I've had to talk to, you know, some teams before too, and it's the same thing, just trying to get the point across to them, like, hey, this is the way you work now is going to stick with you for the rest of your life, and if you're lazy, it's going to come back to haunt you.
And it's not going to be easy, and nobody's coming to save you, so you better learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and you better learn how to get to work.
For sure. Well, we appreciate you coming on, Jeff Hill.
I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, I'm glad you can make it back to Fort. Where are you living now?
In Cypress, down in Houston.
Gotcha. What are you doing for work?
I do business development for BSN Sports. We're an athletic supply company. We work high schools, colleges across the country. And my job is to go into schools and just get to know coaches. I speak to the kids. I work with them on their, you know, defense game plan. If they got a good linebacker, I work with him. Just do whatever I can to make their lives easier. And it's been a perfect job for me because my dad was a high school coach and highly respected one. And I've gotten to learn more about who he is through what I do now. And it kind of made me realize I need to do more with my life as far as helping people, because my dad's helped a lot of people in his life. And so this has given me a chance to do that.
Yeah, I coached 7-on-7 with John D'Arce for a couple years, and it gives you a lot of respect for the coaches that you put through hell in your past, and so you can kind of bond with them a little bit. And even the same thing, like, you know, middle school coaches, high school coaches, all of them, like, you just kind of have that respect for them after you've had to also coach high school and middle schoolers.
And you can't find enough of them right now. No. You know what I mean? It's there's so many kids out there that need that need that structure. They want it. They're not going to ask for it, though. You gotta go out and you're not going to be their friend. No. You're going to be their mentor. You're going to be the guy like GP was for us.
Sometimes you have to be the dad that they don't like.
There's a lot of guys I played with that hated Coach Patterson when he played for them.
Yeah.
And now look back on it and go, that was the best thing I could have ever happened to me. And it's because Gary held them accountable.
Yeah. But that's why we love TCU, and that's why, you know, we love Coach P, obviously, for everything that he did for us, brought us Big 12 championship, Mountain West Conference championships, all the nine. But
Colorado Circuit.
Yeah, Colorado Circuit's
film test
so much. But to put you on the spot a little bit, going into this Texas Tech game, score prediction, what are you thinking?
You know, after seeing the defense play the way they did last week, I think they'll be able to carry that momentum into it. Now, obviously, Texas Tech knows how to, you know, play offense, or at least that's the rumor.
Yeah.
When we played them, we held them to 3 points, which wasn't a big deal. But I would look somewhere in the 23 to 27 range, maybe 23 to 35.
Close game.
Yeah. Yes and no. I would say TCU gets out on top early. Tech maybe makes a run late, but then we finish it off.
Gotcha.
If all you gamblers don't listen to me, by the way.
I see. Anytime I've predicted that we blow a team out, we end up getting blown out, so I can't do that anymore. I'm going to keep it close. I'm going to go – I think it's going to be 31-27. Like, same kind of thing.
23-35.
I'm going to go 31-27. A little closer, hopefully. Or not hopefully. Hopefully it's a blowout. We just, everybody smiles all day. I think it's...
I like the tight ones.
Yeah, I don't... I hated the Oregon game. Like, that is my one of my least favorite games. Like, it was... Yeah, the Alamo Bowl. We came back.
I broke my pinky during that game.
Yeah, I hated that. I also hated the Texas Tech game where AG caught the back of the end zone pass. Yeah. That play should not have happened. AG was wide open at the very beginning of the play, and even Deuce has admitted it since. Like, yeah, I should have just hit him right away, and we would have had a touchdown. It would have been fine.
There's a lot of shoulda, woulda, coulda.
I know, 100%. But I like Peach Bowl games. I like blowouts. That just satisfies me so much more. Yeah. And the other games just stress me out. My adrenaline gets going. And then we lose a close game, and then I'm even more mad.
I run on adrenaline, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I try to not let it come out too much. But, yeah, I think we come out on top. I think it is a close game, but I think we score late to kind of put us ahead and pull it out. But yeah, again, I thank you, Jay Phil, for coming on.
No, yeah, appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure having former players. One question from the.
You blew out your knee a bunch, broke your nose a bunch. What are all the, how many times did you break?
We want to, the audience wants to break down.
I've had 13 surgeries total. Two knee left, two right knee, three right shoulder, two left shoulder, wrist, elbow, hip, finger. So I don't know how many that is, but it was also because the way I played wasn't smart. I played 100 miles an hour every time I could and threw my body around like it was nothing, but that was the only way I could play and still look like I deserved to be there. You know, I didn't have the talent some of those other guys had. So I had to be the guy that thrived on pain and toughness and violence, and it worked for me. It worked for me until it didn't work for me, I guess.
I
broke my nose four times. Yeah.
I think the only thing that I ever had happen to me was I had a slightly torn hamstring first year of college, and then
I'm so sorry.
This is the thing is I never had enough injury to be out of practice. I had to practice, and they would always just like see what you can do.
You were a good wide receiver, man.
I couldn't afford to miss anything. I was just like, if I sit out, then they're gonna think that
I'm useless.
You like
them slants very much, but you
I did not like the slants. I got flipped a couple times. I always got right back up. I'm fine.
I will give it to you. Yeah, you did.
I might have thrown a football back at a couple people, but
I wouldn't matter.
I got up. It goes back to the adrenaline. Once it kicks in, I'm gonna.
If you're gonna compete, that's what happens.
Yeah, I'm gonna fight. Like, I'm gonna say this is what's gonna happen. And I did dislocate my finger, but it relocated like immediately. And I just remember one practice.
I never went back.
Yeah, mine. they're all messed up. The knuckles are all messed up. But I remember just looking down at my glove. And like you can see the seams on the glove on that backside, and it was just all red. Like I just like looked down, I was like, oh, that's not good. Took it off, like the skin had been punctured and all that stuff.
It was fun.
I know. Prima donna.
That was like a weekly thing for me, but I'm sorry.
That's our wide receiver, you know.
Violin.
Diva, yeah.
Violin's playing right now.
Our diva injuries. but no, it was fun. It was a fun time.
No, I did have fun, though.
I did get a concussion my last day of practice ever.
Yeah.
I got a concussion.
They
dropped you
and they were carrying you off the field?
No. It was one of those things where I just had to keep playing. I didn't tell anybody. Yeah,
most of my concussions were that.
I had several that I just was.
A lot of times
just,
I remember going, please be fourth down, please be fourth down.
You just let them roll and just like whatever. I just remember immediately getting up and everything was ringing, pain. Like I think it was a slant.
Yeah.
Jeff Gladney, RIP. He like slung me down and it was that Incarnate Word turf.
Yeah.
That was like rock hard,
the
like
AstroTurf.
Yes, it was the AstroTurf. It was like rock hard, and my head just, you see it on camera. I have the video. It just bounces twice, and you're just like, oh, that's not good.
Builds character.
Yeah, 100%. And headaches.
Those don't go away.
You want to answer my question about do coaches chirping, do the refs hold it against them on the
side? Do refs hold coaches chirping against them on the sidelines? Specifically, it was brought up about Coach Dykes.
I don't think so. I think in that particular case, that ref may have heard something he didn't hear or heard somebody else say something.
He is. To be fair,
they will give him a warning, you know, like to back off. And I think what happened, I don't know, I'm just guessing, but I think what happened in that game, they may have warned him, and he didn't say anything, but somebody else did, and maybe they thought it was him, and so they took it out on him. I thought it was I thought there was a wrong call, to be honest with you, but it's not my call to make.
Yeah. We obviously played with under Coach P, and so I was honestly kind of shocked that of all that Coach P did and said to a referee, and we've heard scrimmage Coach P like kick refs out of scrimmages and practices and stuff like that. I was shocked that that was like the first time a TCU coach had gotten penalized in 20 years. Yeah. However long. I don't know if Coach P ever got one at any point in time, but
yeah. That goes to the whole game, with the targeting, with all this.
Refs are sensitive. We got to, even worse than my dislocated finger one time, refs have really sensitive feelings.
I'm going to stay out of that one.
I make it very vocal.
I don't know
this.
If I'd have made it through a game today if I was playing.
I yelled at coaches in 7-on-7. Like, I literally, no, never mind. I have made it very vocal about my opinion on refs on this podcast, and I don't like any of them.
I don't want to hate on the refs. The rules that they're enforcing are getting a bit much.
Yes.
I mean, when you have a linebacker that takes on a running back in a hole, perfect form tackle, and they say he led with his head, what the hell else do you leave with? I mean, that's how you stop a running back, especially a 240-pound one.
Yeah, I have a lot of issues with a lot of rules, especially the ones that it's in the favor of the offense most of the time. My biggest one, top rule, I think it should be eliminated, taken out of the game, it's stupid, is illegal touching, which does hurt the offense. But it's the whole, if you step out of bounds, you have to reestablish yourself, but then somebody else has to touch the ball first. It hurt us in the Arkansas game, and that's why we ended up having to kick that field goal, and we got it blocked and lost. But I think illegal touching is the dumb. It's like we're the only sport that you can't step out of bounds and, have no repercussions. Like, every other sport, they can run out, come back in, touch the ball, they're fine. I hate illegal touching.
The other thing I worry about is when you hit a guy when he has his pads up here, he's got it protected. If they keep throwing flags, they're going to start hitting the guys in their legs where there's no pads.
Well, that's what happened in the NFL.
See
a lot of blown knees. It started happening in the NFL because they stopped making guys go up high.
And I would rather get hit where I have pads.
Yes. Anyway, we could talk about rules all day. I love it. I'm always debating rules. I think a lot of the rules in college football are stupid. But that's what we're dealt. And, you got to win the game. However, you got to win the game. But anyways, that kind of brings a wrap to everything tonight. Again, appreciate you coming out. Appreciate our audience.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Our lovely, beautiful audience for coming out. Now we get time at the end of the night. We get to put up our frogs and say... Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.
Heck yeah. Everybody go out.